always working on shit.
Constantly.
The amount of prototypes, design work being done, artwork, the stupid ideas that turn into weird realities.
We got some good ones coming up.
Yeah, what do we have coming up for Sneak Reaper Industries?
What can we talk about? So out of the woodwork, a lot of people have come out. We have a cigar collaboration. This is not the company that we're going to be collaborating with, but we are doing a cigar. We are doing a watch band with a company for like, how do you describe those kind of watches? Like, did you see the picture of my watch? It's like instead of NATO straps, it's basically NATO straps for watches. So like you can switch, you can put them on your Apple Watch if you have the right connections, or it's usually like diver watches kind of stuff. We're doing one of those here. By the time this airs, it'll probably have already happened. We are doing this company called Project Monarch. They did some really cool art with like a the Sneak Reaper with a pair of dual nods and an MP5. That's coming out. We are doing two more flavors of beef jerky and some Mexican candy.
We went to this this company that does these specialty runs, and the guy that runs it is basically like, you know,
cool dude.
Try whatever.
Yeah, he was just letting us take whatever. we were literally kids in a candy shop.
The sriracha bacon. Holy shit!
The sriracha and the boysenberry.
Holy.
So we will be. So Sneak Reaper Industries will be the only place besides Knott's Berry Farm that sells boysenberry beef jerky.
Yeah.
Because they're letting me do that because they know that's my favorite flavor of the beef jerky, and it's kind of like maybe a small personal favor. It's
for
so
me,
good though.
For me, it's like a protein and also energy, like tied into one.
Yeah.
Like, I mean,
shit don't go bad. It lasts for a long time. So like what I like about it too is I need to start just bringing it more on these trips so we can actually eat. But it's like skinny packages
I'm sorry, dude. I'm laughing because I had a bag of like DONs.
No, you always have food.
It's eating it.
You never go hungry.
I finished it. When I finished it, you were like, dude, I could really eat right now. I was about to pull out the empty bag.
You always have fucking snacks, dude. And I never see you buy them. You always, your backpack is like Santa's Christmas sack where it just always have chips coming out of it.
I live out of
but
my
I never
bag.
See you buy the chips. They're always just a backpack full of chips.
Every time I like we have snacks here.
Yes.
Which, like, and I may have already stored some in my bag. If ever I see any sort of like laid out, dude, I snipe shit. I'm a scavenger. Like when I go to hotels that I get free breakfast, I'm like, okay.
And lunch now. Lunch.
I'll open up my backpack and I'll fill it. I don't know. For me, it's just like, man, I grew up, like my work life was basically running around and not being able to go anywhere to eat. So I always have something in the bag.
See, you're used to that. You're already like.
I'm programmed.
Yeah, you're programmed to grab food and like have it with you. I'm like, I mean, I did have protein bars and stuff, but.
But the whole reason why we started the whole beef jerky thing was. Because one of the main things I always carry with me, and it, like Mexican carne seca or like dried meat beef jerky is completely different. Every now and then I'll find it.
That's true. I haven't seen beef jerky down here.
Yeah, there are. But it's weird. Like,
is it good or not good?
If anybody comes to Tijuana, go to Farmacia Roma, and it's specifically in the Farmacia Roma is a pharmacy. They sell. This I don't know why it's like exclusive to that store. This beef jerky with a cow on the logo.
Mm-hmm.
Fire.
Really?
Fire beef jerky.
We're going to have to get some of that.
I usually stuff my backpack with some of that stuff when I travel. So I can, like, whenever I'm passing through TJ, I'll invest I'll invest in some of those dried provision snacks.
Hmm.
But yeah, that boysenberry is
amazing,
sweet, energetic, and protein full. So it's nourishing.
And honestly, for what it is, even if you eat the whole package, it's not a lot of calories. Like you don't feel guilty eating it, and it's still protein.
Yeah,
you're not like eating cake.
Yeah,
tres leches.
Tres leches. That was pretty wild, right?
Tomorrow, I'm getting you tres leches, and I already know from where. So you're gonna have to like say, you haven't had my wife's tres leches, right? Cake. Okay, so we're gonna get some probably tomorrow, and there's already some in my refrigerator. I've eaten like two.
We were in Denver, doing a series of classes out there with John from Copus John. It was his birthday, and you said like, oh, let's take him a cake. We're in the middle of Denver at like 10 o'clock at night.
Yeah, no, it was like 10:38 at night, and
yeah. And I was like, there's no
grocery stores. But then all of a sudden,
there's no way we're going to find Mexican tres leches cake that is worth a damn at this hour of night randomly in Denver. And as I said that, a Mexican market
popped up on the left.
24 hour a day open Mexican market.
And the cake was good.
As soon as we got in there, the security guard, ¿qué pasó? Buenas noches. Like in pure clisp. It was like you were back in Mexico. And we went to the, he's just like, oh, the pastel allá. Like in Spanish, he pointed. And
that's all they had was tres, like a plethora of tres leches cakes.
It was the universe telling me to shut up and have more faith, I guess.
We were literally about to make a U-turn because we were like, fuck this. We're not going to find, we're not going to find a grocery store, let alone a tres leches cake. And then it was just like,
great tres leches in the middle of the night in Denver.
It's pretty fucking good.
So what else are we working on?
One of the things, I don't know if we've talked about this when we did a Denver breakdown video? I don't think we did.
I don't remember.
One of the things that when I build the custom rosaries, I start off with vintage rosaries. So I do my best to find vintage rosaries. And then usually you'll help me like make sure that they're vintage or older antique. And it takes me a long time to find like 10. It normally takes me like 3 months to acquire 10 of them. That's going to like antique stores all over the place in the US, because you don't find vintage rosaries out here. For the most part, I haven't been able to find any, but it takes me about 3 months to find 10. And that's going to antique stores, the thrift shops, wherever I can. And normally you'll find like the cheap 99-cent ones, but to find like vintage would be rosaries is can be hard. So right next to High Altitude MMA is this really big antique mall. And in one spot, I think actually you found them, in one spot, we ended up picking up like 20.
Yeah.
And normally, like, I have a price point that I like to buy these at, and these were like at that price point, which, because sometimes they'll be too much and I'll be like, I'll have to pass on them. But these were at the right price point and a lot of them. And this is kind of fucked up, but we had got there just in time. We had got the lady up front like, hey, can you open this up, this case for us? And then some people walked up and wanted to look at the rosaries too, that we were interested in. But like assholes, we bought every single one, like all 20 of them.
They came back to the same case.
Yeah, so I bought all of them except for one, and that one wasn't an old one. So I do have custom rosaries coming again, which will all be, I'm going to let, this is an, like a, I hate to seem like we're plugging Patreon, but if you really want, I'm going to give Patreon, again, the dead drop. I'm going to give them first access to everything. I mean, like the last time when we dropped all the Patreon, the dead drop Santa Muerte stuff, the dead drop didn't leave anything for the general public. And I mean, I'm sorry. That's what you get when you get it. I mean, you're paying for that first dibs. So if you really want the first dibs at it, you got to join the dead drop. But so I do have a bunch of, custom rosaries that I need to start building. It's just, we've been so busy, I haven't had a chance, but they probably should drop this month if I have time to finish them. I have found a lot of like really cool vintage, especially in Guadalajara. Guadalajara seemed to have a really good amount of vintage stuff to embellish these rosaries. So
we found this treasure hoard of these really old traveling Santa Muerte dijes.
That's the hardest. Sideways. I think that version of Santa Muerte is now the hardest. That's the most sought after version that I'm looking for, and I think it's the hardest to find right now.
Yeah, like we bought every single.
I really like that style too, but it's just really hard to find. We bought them we bought them all.
Yeah.
What's wild is, I'm stoked about it because I'm like, I really like that style, and then two, the shop owner is really stoked because it's like I've been sitting on these for 7 years. You know, it's like.
Yeah.
So it's like it's and you know, they give us a good price because we're buying them all. So it works out. But we do have custom rosaries coming. I'm going to take my hand at also building our own version of rosaries. They're not going to be vintage, but they may have some vintage embellishments on them, but I picked up a lot of cool stuff that I think will just it'll make sense to our audience because like Kevlar will be involved and there's some other tools that'll probably be implemented into the rosary. So so that's coming.
And for people that don't know about these weird objects and things, I've been basically making my own, customizing my own, hiding tools in my own religious regalia for decades now. And it's something I kind of brought on the scene with me when I started like doing the brand.
I think it's a form of your ADD and the same as mine, where everything has to have a dual purpose.
Yeah. If you're going to carry something, it should be able to do multiple things. We figured out that Kevlar cordage could cut through anything that a lighter could burn. I remember all of us saying like, how can we carry around some of this type of stuff? And the first thing that popped into my mind was infusing it into a scapulario, like a Catholic scapular. All of us were carrying it around. The group that I was working with, all of us carried around the Santa Muerte scapularios, which were already kind of spicy in and of themselves because of what they represented. But when we started like infusing them with Kevlar so we can, you know, utilize them to get zip ties off or to cut through anything that was tied to anything, it was cheaper and easier to use than shears, and you know.
And I've heard you say this too before. Is it? So say, hypothetically speaking, and God forbid, you get taken. Is it? I think I might have heard you say this a long time ago. Is it kind of a? I mean, I know they'll bring you down to your underwear and stuff like that. But are they going to leave the
sometimes? Yeah. So
they won't are they going to leave the scapulario so, on you, or is it like not, a, is I'm, it a spooky thing for not, them to take
not,
it off you?
Not,
or
not? Any, I mean, not. I mean, with the amount of popularity these things have, and I don't. I think
so. That's kind of done with.
Yeah,
but I remember you saying like maybe I don't know, like
yeah,
7, 10 years ago, it was like yeah they're not going to take it off. Yeah. But nowadays,
I think everything's taken from you. But it's just something I don't know. For me, it's something I used to carry a lot. The first ones were basically actually traditional windowed scapulario that would buy with like Malverde or the Virgin of Guadalupe in there. You could slide a little metal inside of them. And I used to just take those, cut them off and put them on Kevlar and just add like a metal magnetic clasp so I could take it off really quickly.
I find that it's just an easy way to carry like lock picking tools and stuff like that, which I have like people will get locked out of their house. And
I mean,
like, I just happen to have it.
Yeah, for me, it's razor blades, locking tools. And again, I remember just making the first posting about them for the first time and then making a few and selling them. And we've never been able to make enough for everybody because everybody wants them.
Speaking of, we just got a new delivery from Mexico of like 400. So I need to put those on the website. So
we've been... They've been bootlegged a lot. And when I say bootlegged, I mean people are making them. They're making their own versions of the homages to them. And
They're inspired.
And I get it. And it's cool. And I've started and made and invented a lot of weird trends that then turned into whole industries. And
think about this, as many, because I know how many we've ordered in the past, even before I was doing purchasing and all that. I know how many we've ordered now. We've sold probably in the neighborhood of like 2,000 scapulars. So there's literally at least probably 1,500 or more people running around now with these things that,
yeah. I mean,
that's wild.
We had a lady that came to one of the classes who got one of the older versions of it, who was at a music festival somewhere.
Oh, I think I remember this.
Yeah. Somewhere in Brazil. She was almost trampled to death. There was a fencing in the area where she was at, and a large crowd of people started running around. She took her scapular off and cut through the fencing because it was being held together with these heavy gauge zip ties. She just went in there and just cut everything off. She couldn't have a knife or anything like that in there because it was a concert venue. But I don't know. It's a nifty tool. I mean, you can use it to cut through seat belts, cut zip ties off of stuff.
And they just, and that, so that Kevlar cord, it's not like really a tactical thing. Kevlar cord is used for like flying kites and stuff.
Yeah.
So that's like the most common use. So like if you're looking for Kevlar cord, it's usually called like kite cordage or something like that.
And if anybody's curious, we've been able to cut whole pig legs off carcasses with Kevlar cordage. So it'll cut through skin as well. So be careful, I guess.
Yeah.
As a brand, we've always tried to integrate a lot of functionality. And also just like for me, I've lived and made a life out of taking notes from some of the more interesting members of society, from criminals to people that are just like, you know, people that have a different way of looking at things. And also my experiences around a lot of this stuff.
Did you guys get the idea, the Kevlar cordage, from people you were picking up, or was that something you guys came up with?
We saw somebody have an accident with it in fishing.
Oh, okay.
And they were like, oh, this cuts. And we saw that it cut through this plastic sheet that the boat had around a place where it was because of the friction. When I saw that, I was like, what else can we cut with it? Hmm. And then, you know, going online, I saw its use as a sear tool. Although, if you noticed, I've never prescribed or used the yellow kind that is very common in the military sear kits and all that. I've always used that Kevlar kite line version. It's because that's what we would find.
Accessible.
Yeah.
What is the yellow stuff? Just the same thing? It's just yellow.
Yeah. I mean, the yellow stuff is basically thinner, and it's
a higher concealed pound better rating or whatever.
It's not. I mean, but the pound rating isn't really around the color. The Kevlar kite stuff is braided in such a way where it's meant
to hold more weight.
Yeah. And I don't know. We've had more luck with that than the yellow. The yellow doesn't last as long, and it has a tendency to crumble away if it gets exposed to light. I've never bought the yellow. The amount of feedback we get from, basically, we do 20 people per class of counter custody, and these people go out and do, you know, travel, go swimming, active sports. Some of them get into some shit. Some of them go to war zones. And I've always kept myself open to any sort of feedback or any sort of experiences that people get to like send in my way. And, you know, I've gotten everything from UV light being kind of damaging to some of the yellow type of Kevlar cordage that is carried by some people.
But the black seems to do better.
The black seems to take it better, or anything that is basically infused with an ink on it will last longer.
Well, that's the same reason why the black zip ties will last longer outside than.
Yeah, that's probably true. So I don't know. The scapulario, the rosaries, because we also used to like make rosaries that had weight on them, which, you know, if I can point at anybody that has been an influence, it would probably be Fred Perrin. Hmm. Fred Perrin sells these very heavy Mardi Gras beads, which basically they look like metal rosaries, but they are, it's a flail. It's a steel.
You own one of those?
Yeah, I do have one of them. I just remember having this light in my head, like, oh, you can carry around this heavy steel flail with you on your neck. And the first one I saw kind of making a cool version of that was Fred. And then we saw, I mean, I've been kind of at the center of a lot of weird trends and fads and EDC things for no other reason that I've always experimented. Every time I find something that I'm interested in, or that the people are carrying around, things that people are working on, I have this, I don't know, ADD. This whole community around me and this whole ecosystem of makers around me, from people that make stuff related to counter custody and Seer to tools, to flashlights, to gear.
We'll be testing out stuff this weekend, actually.
Yeah. So, which is great. And I love it. And I always give, if I find something I like, I'll promote the shit out of it. I never want anything around it, but it's allowed me to kind of like be at the center of some weird.
People have started whole companies on Instagram posts that you've done.
Yeah. I mean,
really?
Hobo Tactical was a thing I would, yeah. There it is. Yeah, that's one of the old school Hobo Tactical sacks. Hobo Tactical was something I would say whenever I would show something that was cheap in nature, but was could be utilized for a tactical application. Like, hey, take two kettlebells and duct tape them together, and now you have a battering ram that you can use to open up any hotel room if you have a gym at your hotel. That's Hobo Tactical. And I would say that. And then he asked me, like, hey, can I use that? It's like, yeah, go ahead. I've had interactions like that with people, you know, that would give me a product. And Coffin Tramp, the guy that does the pencils that are.
Was he the original pencil guy?
Yeah, I think so.
I think so too.
Yeah, like I remember.
Did he get the idea from John Wick? Or
I have no idea where he got the idea to make these. It's basically a G10 shaft inside of a heavy oak wood. It's a pencil, but it'll go through you.
Yeah.
I remember he sent me a few of them, and on the second time I was on Rogan, I was like, "Hey, you want to see something cool?" And he loved it. So he was like, "Hey, can I keep this?" Like, "Yeah, here he is." I gave him one. Lex Friedman, I also gave one to, and it's been something that I've, you know, it's not my product. I don't make any money off it. But again, if I find something that I think is cool
and works
and it's worth sharing with people, then I'm all about it. So every now and then we do stuff in the brand that gets picked up by other people and gets inspired.
Flattering.
It's flattering. You know, I've always kind of remind people it's not that I'm greedy or that we're trying to like keep all the business for ourselves. We have charities that we support, and some of those funds actually come from our product line.
At the same time, we're allowed to make a living for ourselves.
Yeah,
like,
but
we gotta pay rent and mortgages and stuff.
All of that is true, but you know, at a deeper level, what is upsetting to me sometimes is when we're trying to do something to gain funds for something, right? So Ruelas, for example, has a dog rescue program here in Mexico, in Mexicali,
which is very much needed. There's freaking dogs everywhere.
But he not only rescues dogs, he will train them and rehabilitate them. That's and I've badass. Seen him do that. And That's it badass. Is we're actually going to go and film with it, film with him and kind of like document some of his process.
What kind of so the dogs are they what. Is it just to normalize them for everyday life, or
how could you sweeten the deal for somebody who wants to adopt a dog?
Exactly.
Give them
obedience training.
Give them a trained dog. So that's what he's doing. And some of these dogs are heavily traumatized from living on the street for so long. And again, I see this guy's work. Why I mention this because. He is the only one that we work with, a knife maker that we work with, where we take nothing from him. Like he will make Elvias with our permission, like the knife design Elvia, and all the proceeds go to his charity, right? So
does he use a certain dog, or is it just whatever dog he?
It's like it's,
all right.
It's,
I'm saying this right now. When my two dogs go, my next dog will be for him.
Cool.
Give me about 10 years.
No, your little two little crackheads you have are gonna outlive you probably. But those I try and integrate a lot of that type of work within the brand because I've been on the other end of it where I'm like wanting stuff. Like we're trying to get some medical equipment together for some pretty amazing individuals. We're fighting on the southern side of the border in an operational unit, very much like the one I used to work with. And, you know, we're trying to figure out funds for that. And a lot of this comes from the support we receive from people on Patreon, which allows us to go on two weird trips to Jalisco and Mexico and
basically give them really interesting, fun content at the same time and products.
We work on content constantly. We work on products constantly. We're working on conversations for them. And we're also working on community for them. We have a few community events planned at some point in front of us. And we're about to go to Blade Show, where it's usually a pretty... It's one of those times where we get to interact with people who are with us, not because of the training or because of the media, but mostly because of the product or the brand or the knives and stuff like that. So it's always interesting to see these different sides of our audience and some of the people that are interact with us. We're going to be at Emerson Knife Table this year.
And we'll also be at John's at Copas too. Okay, we're going to do a small thing with him.
Okay, so we're going to be at Copas's table for a small little event on Saturday.
And then Emerson's both Friday and Saturday.
Yeah, so like if you want to say hi, swap stories, Tio Ed's beef jerky a tasting. Well, we might bring some samples and some swag to give away. So like definitely come and look, seek us out.
That's one of the things. So with Tactical Outfitters, I used to be, I don't know what happened. Like I think because we got so big so quick, I kind of, and like on, you know, just being accountable and like responsibility. I think what happened is we got so big that I felt like didn't need to do as much community involved stuff. And I miss that. Like I miss not so much really doing the shooting events because that was a lot of fucking stress and it was a lot of risk. Cause all it took, I mean, if somebody just ND'd into somebody, I mean, I'm fucking done, you know, but I miss, like I used to do legit like I had a German Shepherd who was receiving legit canine training that we would do like every other Saturday at my shop. I would hold lock picking classes. I would teach 25 random people how to lock pick. I had this high level karate and knife guy like show us all these techniques. So we do like almost like every other Saturday evening I was putting on classes, and I had a really small space, but we were, you know, doing a lot of that stuff. I want to bring that back. I want to go back to that, and not so much because I miss it. It's not for like really the financial reasons. I miss doing that. I miss being, because I got so busy with Tactical Outfitters and I kind of had to step away from like doing community stuff, because I mean we turned into this really big $1 million business and it just, there was no time to do it, and I kind of stepped away from it, and I shouldn't have. I should have stuck with the roots and kept doing community stuff like how I started. But I think that's just being honest with myself. I think I forgot my roots and what made, honestly, like I never I never bought followers. I never did any of that dumb shit. I used to hold really cool giveaways. I used to do all this stuff. And that's the stuff that got, you know, Tactical Outfitters to 114,000 followers or whatever, because I was really involved in the community. And that's probably why it doesn't grow anymore. It's just because we're not involved as much. But I'm going to start changing that, I think, with the help of Sneak Reaper. So, and I've had a storefront for Tactical Outfitters for over like 10 years, but we've been so busy over the years with online, we just don't promote the storefront. And honestly, the only thing we're really selling at the storefront and even online is just patches. So I have all this extra space. So what I did was I brought in all kinds of extra gear and stuff that I didn't have on the website. So I never put knives on the website because I was too worried about the web hosting companies like terms when it came to carrying knives. So I didn't want to lose, you know, my really good website hosting ability. So I have a lot of knives in the shop that now I'm pretty much clearing out at a really good price, and a bunch of gear and stuff like that that I'm just clearing out to make. And this is like, we've kind of already announced it online. But for those who haven't seen it, we're going to do the first, basically you can call it a Botanico or you can call it a storefront or an outlet. Sneak Reaver is going to have a legit storefront now. So you can come down to Southern California and buy everything on the website or try stuff out. We're going to have everything on the website and more. So you'll be able to buy knives. Like we have an event where we're bringing a bunch of Copus knives to here. I can't really talk about the event because it's not a public event, but we are going to sell knives there to a certain community, and anything left over will go in the storefront. And what's cool about this storefront is I have two glass cases in the storefront.
I wanted to take this opportunity to thank each and every one of our Patreon members for their generous support. It's the only way we can bring some of these amazing people behind the microphone and have some of these amazing Midnight of the Soul conversations for you guys. If you're not already a part of the Patreon community, please consider joining us. We have our giant online training catalog for you guys to have access to, as well as some exclusive Sneak Reaper Industries merch drops for you guys at the dead drop tier. I would also like to thank the company Sneak Reaper Industries, one of our main supporters and a company that provides some of the most amazing urban wear, survival specific, and cutlery out there. Your support not only makes this show possible, but also supports some of the charities that we run, including the Fighter's Kitchen out of Puerto Escondido, where we're supporting some up-and-coming fighters under the tutelage of Eddie Farrell. Thank you for your support, and again, please consider joining us on the Patreon. And now back to the show.
I have two glass cases at the shop. My idea is, and I kind of need some like input for what else to do, but I have these two glass cases. One of them is just going to be, I've been kind of amassing the right word?
Amassing.
And I've been asking all our vendors to give us samples. Yeah. And so one of the cases is just going to be a drool case. Like you're not going to be able to buy anything on that. And I want to catalog all the stuff we've done in the past and kind of show people. Because me, I think it's very interesting to see like all the different knives, every version of the scapular. Just like I have pretty good collection of almost everything. And what I don't have, I'm asking vendors, which everybody has been like great about sending.
But there's like,
I'm not going to sell anything in that case. You're just going to. I mean,
there's I didn't know, you know, like. I didn't know that some of this stuff is being sold
on the secondary on eBay
for stupid. And I will never go into that because I don't know. I'm Catholic and I feel guilty.
What do you mean you won't go into it?
I mean, I won't flip anything.
No.
There's no,
I don't mind that there's a secondary market, to be honest. I mean, that's the sign of that. You're probably doing things right, but we're not, we want to equip and give you guys as much cool shit as possible. Yeah. We're not trying to be supreme.
Yeah. You know? But in when I when we started making the Elvia, Tracker Dan was the first one that made it. And I remember he made...
I don't have one of his. I need to get one of his.
I got the first steel one that he made is the one, is my, is the only Elvia that I have from him. And he gave me another one, a flat wrap one that I gave to Rogan. So Rogan has an Elvia. And he made three SM100 nickel titanium ones.
Oh, shit.
Those were the first Elvias that he made. And I went around the country doing classes with those in my backpack, telling people like, hey, if you want some of these, he wanted $800 for them. If only I knew, like I should have, like he told me like, if you want, you can keep one for yourself. And I was like, nah, I don't like them. They look too fruity. I want a steel one. The steel one looks cooler. Those are very expensive. I kicked myself for letting.
Any idea who has them?
I saw one come up for auction for over two grand somewhere.
I need one of them. The collection.
I've seen him grind those. They will eat bands. The yeah, they'll eat belts.
Like, that shit's dangerous too. If they snap.
Yeah.
That's what John was telling me.
Nickel titanium is space metal. I mean, this thing is. It trying to grind that thing is just a nightmare. So I know why they're expensive. And then there was a Canadian company that I can't remember the name of right now that made the first G10 Elvias.
Hmm. Are they still around?
I don't think they're still around. The first version they made out of the first version he made of them had Beff serrations on them. And apparently he reached out and asked for that not to be done anymore because it's like an intellectual property of his, I guess. So those are like, if people want to talk about rare versions of the Elvia, that's a pretty rare one. I mean, I know there's a few of them out there. He sold a few of them, but I have like one, I think.
You're pretty bad about keeping your stuff.
People know this about me, and I know some take advantage of it sometimes, but every now and then I'll get somebody showing up to me or to a class or showing up somewhere, and they're like, man, I've always wanted
one. It's so hard to get, yeah.
And I just, you know, I've taken
stop.
I've taken stuff out of my pocket. I remember I've given some shit away. But again, that's who I am, man. And it's more of the aspect of I've been there. Like, I'm a fan of knives. I mean, I remember when Emerson said, like, hey, you want to make a knife? Like, you want to collaborate on a knife? Like, my mind.
Right, mine. That's what I was saying. My mind blew your mind.
Melted, right?
Speaking of, we're doing a Emerson weaponology class in October.
Yeah,
we're finalized the dates.
A cool thing about that, I trained with Emerson way back when. He showed me how to use knives in a pretty interesting way. And how to train my body and mindset. Mr. Emerson is.
This might be the last time that we do a weaponology with Emerson too. So.
Yeah. The amount of like history between me and the brand is pretty interesting. Like, I was active carrying their shit for years. And I would post about it. Like, hey, what are you carrying around? Like, grenade, you know, machine gun, you know, yeah. Emerson, PTAC, Persian, you know, I would post some of these things up. And I remember going to like a California custom knife show way back when and sketching him out. I went over and said, like, hey, I want a PTAC. And he's like, well, we don't have them in production right now. And he had one in like at the counter. Like, what about that one? Oh, that's a custom one. You're going to have to like the lottery. And I'm like, how much is that? And I'm like, oh, fuck, there's no way I can afford this on my salary.
Yeah.
I just remember like having this conversation with him about, oh, that knife goes through body armor. And it's like, why would that be an issue for you? Or Like, what's up with that?
Yeah.
And kind of explain a little bit about it. He's kind of sketched out by it.
Does he remember that conversation?
Oh, he definitely remembers that conversation. It was sketched out by me and, you know, for obvious reasons.
How many years ago was that?
Like, oh, that 15, was
15, 20?
Yeah. I mean, I was still active. I remember that kind of sketched him out. And the second time I saw him, I was with some Navy SEAL friends of mine who, you know, we were training out in Coronado, and there was an interaction, and I'm like, hey, look, these guys can tell you that I'm not a shady piece of shit. So I think he kind of like lowered his guard down a little bit with me, and then eventually I made it up to the to their academy they have. They have an awesome gym next to their shop, which has always been like mind-blowing.
Do they still do those classes there?
Which classes?
Like their academy classes?
Like knife related classes. Yeah. I haven't heard of one being done there for years now. I know they do a regular Gracie jiu-jitsu class there. It's basically a Gracie gym. I know for a long time, Mr. Emerson used to do some specialized training out of there. Like I met people that went through some of his, more closed doors training. When I finally got to participate in one of those, I mean, it was pretty interesting seeing his kind of like take on it, I guess. Everybody has a take on what you should know when it comes to like taking out a knife and using it on somebody. I took a lot from that, experience-wise, style-wise, teaching-wise.
You'd say he's one of your mentors for sure?
He's a man of honor, rare man of honor out there. Definitely followed a lot of his philosophy and read a lot of his books. Realistically, man, and I say this, not as somebody blind trying to make myself out as a victim or not, but not a lot of people open their doors to me because of my background. That's like the truth. Like they didn't know what to make of me, like companies.
And this is when you were active.
I mean, when I was active and when I got out, you know, they didn't know what to make of me. There's not a lot of people like me out there, and not a lot of people gave me chances. And one of the only people that did, and one of the only companies that did, and I've worked with a lot of big ones, and not a lot of them wanted to actually, you know. Emerson was one of the first big ones that actually gave me a chance. I remember having this conversation with him about, like, why don't we do an Elvia? And it turning into a conversation that lasted about 2 years. And then eventually when that actually dropped, it crashed their website.
Yeah. I remember trying to get in on that initial drop.
It crashed their website. And I was like,
I didn't get in on it either because it crashed.
Does this mean it's like a good thing? And he's like, yes.
Was that the first time it had ever crashed on them?
I think so. Yeah. I don't know, but I think it was a pretty unique event, I guess, is how they expressed it to me. And I remember being at the Atlanta Blade Show for the first time they debuted and having this big Elvia sign there, you know, and then realizing that, oh, it's my mom's design. It's not mine, really. It's her name there. Because it's all her, you know. She was very instrumental in coming up with that design, and her philosophy and what she showed me about knives is very much in the DNA of that design. It was mind blowing, and it became kind of like my first mains, like when it comes to the tactical community, kind of like my first mainstream thing that I did.
Like your step into it.
Yeah, yeah. And then, you know, and then Street Creeper Industries kind of took hold, and it's been kind of growing alongside with a lot of that other, it started with Emerson, then Tops wanted to work with us, you know, and so it's been just mind-blowing.
Those guys are fun at Tops.
Oh, yeah.
It's like anytime you're around them, it's like a fucking party. Like they invited us to go, we should go do this. They do a... they take the razors and they go and do like a multi-day ride up wherever they are. And,
it's
take them up on that.
It's a, all of them are like paisanos.
They're all, and all they do is talk shit. It's great. I love it.
I remember the first time I went there, Leo, God bless him, great dude, just takes me on a tour of the shop. And I started realizing that it's mostly like Mexicans and like, you know, second generation Mexicans.
And he worked his way from the bottom to the now the top of that company.
Yeah.
Gangster.
He knows all the parts of that company. And I don't know. And for me, it's always been like I remember getting there and just the amount of shit.
Fun. That's why we hung out at their booth so long at SHOT Show, because it's fucking best booth to hang out. It's just entertaining.
It's shit talking. Shout out to those Top's Daily Grind is their podcast.
Yeah.
I was on there once when I went out there. Probably we should go out there and visit them again. But yeah, it's companies like theirs, companies like Emerson, and a few other pretty legit
companies. Those are the best ones. Like I always want to do more with them because it's fun. It's not just because like you're making money or whatever. It's just,
it brings
joy to your life.
It's a great time hanging out with them. And like hanging out at the Emerson booth is also always a great time.
He's the only person that I've ever had engrave a knife like with his name.
Yeah. I got a Persian with his name on there. Right. A joke that I was telling, it's not even a joke, it's true. I've participated in a lot of Emerson lotteries. I think over 9 of them in the past few years. And I like to consider that, like, I have his phone number and I can call him up. And, like his family's pretty cool with me.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm friends with his son, Lucas, who is also, like, a fucking amazing knife maker in his own right. I think that's the future of Emerson is right there with Lucas. And I've never won a fucking single one of those fucking... I've never won a custom lottery ever.
See, I don't like asking manufacturers either for like something for myself. Like if it's something that I'm going to use myself, I would rather buy it. But I right now have no problem asking for samples for the archive because I think that's for the fans and for the community to see all the stuff that is maybe from the past or maybe still available.
Yeah.
So like I don't have any problems asking for that. But when it comes to myself, if I'm going to daily carry it, I'd prefer probably to just buy it.
Yeah.
Like I don't know. I don't know why that's weird to me, but I don't know. I'd rather.
I remember looking at the first custom Elvia, you know, that came out of like one of those cases where it's like, I'll make you one. Like, no, you don't understand. I have to win it. You know, I have to win this. So to this day, the only custom Emerson that I have is the prototype of the production Elvia. That's the only custom Emerson that I own.
The mini that you have isn't a custom?
That's not from him.
Okay.
I told Lucas that whenever he made the first custom Elvia mini to like, hey, give me a heads up. Like, I'm never going to fucking win that lottery. I told Lucas, you've witnessed me with my just always losing and just making it a point like this lottery is legit because like, I'm friends with all these people. I've never won this fucking lottery. And he hooked me up last, I think it was last year. He was like, I remember getting to a show late and he was like, are you serious about what you told me? I was like, yeah, Lucas. And he just pulled that thing out and like, give it.
That's the Serape one?
No, it's a green canvas handle one. It's the only custom that I have.
Okay.
But yeah, some of these brands have allowed me, specifically some of these legacy brands, just like Topps, Emerson, have allowed kind of like given me some validity. And also, like, again, like, people
also help them out too, because I mean we have a huge, you know, in popularity. It's just,
I mean, yeah, it's an audience that that we've built over years of traveling, training, cross promotion.
Yeah, this was definitely not an overnight deal. I mean, both you and I think jumped on Instagram about the same time, and it's been a good 10. No, it's going on longer than that. It's probably been about 13 years now of just.
Yeah.
Posting and posting. And then And it didn't come overnight.
No, and also just proving our brand. Like, yeah, we travel with it. We use it. We send it to people. We send it to butchers. We send our knives to survivalists. We move things around. We have concepts we want to make. We want to give options and opportunities to all other smaller makers that are out there that want to maybe make a version of the Elvia, or want to somehow be promoted by us. And again, I've carried, you know, knives from other companies that are not my own knives because I like them and I like promoting everybody. So I'm a nerd for gear. I'm a nerd for knives. Oh, and that's how I approach it. That's how I approach this community. And again, I wasn't given a lot of chances when I started. I've had to make my own chances. I've had to make my own kind of like way. And I've hadn't had it easy. And it's amazing now to kind of be at the center of this whole ecosystem that we've now created, where we have, you know, famous musicians showing up on stage in some of the biggest platforms in the world, wearing our stuff, or people
and befriending us too. It's like,
or people in some ninja specialized units that are like, hey, can we have some of them knives? It's like, sure.
Yeah. And shout out to the manufacturers when we ask them for that and they don't hesitate at all.
Yeah.
Don't even ask for compensation. We don't forget that. It's very much acknowledged, like, when we appreciate.
Yeah. The guys at Turner.
Yes.
Have always been amazing. Copas has always been amazing when we ask them for either samples or like, hey, we have this specialty unit where we need to send stuff to, and these are the parameters.
Because I think it's legit. We're not generally, you know, asking for ourselves.
Yeah.
Like I said earlier, it's hard for me. If I know what's going to be like this Elvia is the first one that is really tight. This is, I think, John's first production of it. And yeah, I bought this. What's crazy is, like, once you train with these knives, like, it's hard to beat. I mean,
you realize what they're for.
Yeah, like, it, good. I don't know. When you and I were messing around with the trainers, the only thing that seemed to work is when you punch the fuck out of my hand, like,
to get it out of something.
Yeah, like, because the way the blade is, it's gonna fillet you any fucking way, and it's like, what the fuck do I, I asked you, I'm like, dude, what the fuck do I do? And you're like, fucking punch the hand or something, like, and that was,
we were hanging out at High Altitude, yeah, MMA with Cody.
And probably the most amazing gym that, you know, like, I love my own personal gym, but Altitude is
high level.
Dude, what are you doing if you're in Denver and not a member of his gym? Like, that's, you had literally have a gold mine right there in Denver. And Cody is probably I've been in various martial arts my whole life, but like really heavily probably the last 10 years. And he is genuinely like, I love my professor. I love my crew. And Cody is like, I wish he was down my way so I could learn from him every day.
He's curious.
Yeah.
Like, hey, like, I remember the
first
time.
He's a badass dude.
The first time I met him at I did a class with Raul Martinez out of the from Rogue Methods. Mm-hmm. And I don't do knife karate. Like, I don't show people how to like duel with knives or any of that. I integrate knives into whatever existing platform you have. And the Elvia and design of it is basically made to be, if you're holding it, it's going to be hard to disarm you because of the curvature it has and how you can basically,
you're
going to
get cut either way, whether it's reverse or regular grip.
And once you kind of figure that out, then you're like, oh, that's why it's shaped this way. And you know, it's playing.
What's crazy is your mom figured that out from a fruit knife. Like, yeah, it's mind-boggling. Like, Victorinox doesn't know that is a human filleting knife as well. Like, that's wild.
You know, when we were like training with Cody. Cody's a curious guy. He like knows about the history of fighting and he like goes all over the place. But when he started seeing how I was using that knife to fillet arms and process,
you could see his, you could see like it was computing, and he's like, oh,
yeah, it's basically, you know, it's a lot of projections, a lot of judo throws, a lot of that type of stuff. But instead of a hand, it's a knife beam.
Yeah, once you pin him against a wall, it's just like, kak, kak, kak. Like yeah. With your action hand, you're fucking done.
And the nature of it, as far as like how I learned it, both from butchery, utilizing a knife for just actually utilizing as a tool, to then learning how to use it from people that were codifying criminal culture in South Africa, or Livre, which was basically experimenting with whatever CCTV video we would find that would showcase something pretty successful. And Scott would have us replicate what we saw in that video in live training sessions with different individuals there. Like, I remember we had this class where we were reviewing every single knife, counter knife, knife defense and knife disarms and shit like that. And we had Filipino martial artist, a Krav Maga level, who knows what guy, a wrestler, this old school karate dude, me, just a cop who worked corrections as well, a judo guy, and just all of these weird different martial arts backgrounds, constantly trying ways of disarming somebody, this stripping weapons, and just realizing how a lot of that wouldn't work if we started applying certain things to make ourselves hard to manage. And one of the things that I specifically started kind of focusing on was like, if the knife that I have is shaped in this way,
you're fucked, really.
There's no way you can gain control of that wrist unless, you know, you're
willing to take cuts. And I mean, and what's crazy too is when you're trying to go for it, you're not just getting cuts like across the river, you're getting them down the river, which is the most gnarliest. So it's like,
it's pretty interesting. It's not new. The design of it is new, or it's new and
it's like edited to be more vicious.
Yeah, it's edited to be more vicious. And there was a lot of, I remember when I was finalizing the drawings of what it would be, it did change from where it was as far as the knife that my mother originally had to what it became. And a lot of that was changed by me so I could, you know, one of the tricks to an Elvia is that the end of the handle aligns to the point of the blade. So this end of the handle aligns with the point of the blade. So even though it looks like a curved knife, it is actually a straight blade. If you think about just the point of the knife and the end of the handle. So it's a stabber. And as soon as you break it, it becomes a slasher. So it could turn into a stabbing implement or a slashing implement by a flick of a wrist.
And what I like about, too, the way you teach weaponology is it's not like fucking kung fu. Like, it's very, you can learn some effective techniques a lot in that weekend that you take weaponology. It's nothing that is insane to learn or even something that you're going to forget. It's very basic.
It's basic. Kind of stuff. It's if you're able to,
but effective.
Yeah. I mean, nothing that I show isn't something that I don't also show you a video of it being applied.
Yeah.
So you see the video of it being applied, you figure out and test some of that with some resistance, and then you actually experience it in the control setting of an animal being hung from the in the middle of the room. And you get this smuggling side of it as well, fabrication, modification side of it as well. So it's pretty interesting. It's basically everything my mom showed me in the span of my youth, as far as like, hey, if you don't have what you would want, here's how you modify and procure, and here's how you would make it better. That was her philosophy. And in my experience at work was basically the same, you know, how to find a a knife that would will do multiple things, how to carry it discreetly and securely, and how to show yourself and other people how to use it under duress to retain your weaponry, to keep people away from you, to keep people from restraining you, and if there is no other option, for it to be a very good option.
And I like that that's a common theme in the classes is, you say it every class multiple times is, I mean, you can buy our stuff, but at, or you can make it. Like, we don't, we're not just like, you got to buy this knife because this is the knife. Like, if you can find something that works just as good and it, you know, you can get it at Walmart for $10, then, you know,
the first version, like, I remember having a conversation with Copus about that. And he's like, how would you want an elevator to look like? And I was like, and I took a Victory Knox fruit knife.
The first thing he was doing was modifying those.
I put it in a bread oven and just melted the handle a bit and just shaped it into that, where I would align the point of the knife with the end of the handle and said, like, here you go, make this. And he's like, fuck, yeah. You know, and still, again, in my head, I will, every now and then I'll look at a kitchen knife or like a pruning knife somewhere that
or a
I could
steak
find
knife at a steak restaurant.
Or a steak knife at Disneyland. I'll see something and I'm like, you know, because I'm always experimenting and always like trying new things. I rarely carry around like any of our knives. If I do, I'm usually camping or I'm somewhere where I'm comfortable and I carry something that I, you know, like I'm not going to carry around Dan's Elvia unless I know that I'm not going to be in a place where I'm going to lose it or some shit like that. So, but I'll experiment with anything. And mostly for me, it's like, how can I give an opinion to somebody if they show up with, let's say, a Strider mm-hmm. folder? How can I give him an opinion about that folder if I have never carried one? And it's a very common knife, you know, specialty knife, but it's common. So, like, I've been, you know, I have to carry one of those for a bit. So I've been carrying around this guy. And it's great. I like it. I like the size. I like the shape of the handle. It's heavy. It's a bit overt, but I like it. Straight blade, heavy as shit. I like it. How can I give you an opinion if I don't carry stuff? Yeah, the Elvia is kind of central to the brand, and it's like our in-house style. But when it comes to weaponology, when it comes to the teaching side of what I do and some of the stuff that I recommend, gear reviews that we're doing for the Patreon, and a lot of the material that we have expanding from the brand, which, again, the training we do provide both to the public, to some specialty groups that we keep closed. The way I form my opinions is field testing everything. I mean, that's... Every now and then you and me are somewhere and I'm like, I'll see something at a gas station. I'm like, let me test this out. Or a student will come to a class and show me something. Have you ever used these? And I'm like, oh, those are great. And like, I have a currently have, I'm building a collection of tire repair kits that are available in the United States that could be weaponized, you know, for no other reason than I just like, you know, it's a pretty good thing to catalog, I guess.
Get it for like $7 at any gas station. And
yeah, and not only that, but also testing how many ways there is to smuggle them into a place where they're not supposed to be smuggled to, and actually testing them out, because we have an amazing testing sample, because we do these classes all over the place, which leads us into we're about to wrap up, but you and me are headed to Upland, yeah. California.
That's the next one.
We're what's the name of the gym we're going to be doing the class?
ASD Concepts.
ASD Concepts, which I think they had their Instagram taken down. So if you can give them,
kind of help them out with that.
Yeah, if you can give them a like and follow. It's run by our friend Jared, a fellow Libre instructor as well, and it's going to be the first collaboration class I do with my friend Paolo, Funker. He has been such a refreshing voice in the whole martial arts community in the past few years. He's a Filipino martial artist that pisses a lot of people off because he has opinions. Opinions are always great, But it's rare that you find somebody that backs up those opinions with actual time testing it, working with these concepts. And Paul's been doing an amazing job kind of having this conversation again about why they train the way they do, what legitimacy there is to certain aspects of training, and not taking all of traditional martial arts as the golden rule. I mean, there's some aspects of it that might not make sense or might not make sense in a modern context. And I think having a half-day weapon, like a one-day weaponology and a one-day Paulo Rubio like concepts class is pretty interesting. We're going to have a pig there, and we're going to basically have a live conversation in front of students of traditional art and martial prowess and strange ditchcraft and criminal culture and smuggling and more of a ambush-based type predatory mindset on the other end, and what they can kind of teach each other and what people can gather from both, yeah. I guess.
It's going to be a good class. It's going to be a full class, and it's definitely been one of the more faster selling out classes. I'm very much looking forward to it. But just to backtrack for a little bit, I know we're about to close here. I wanted to bring up the Sneak Reaper storefront one more time and kind of close with that. Like I said, we're going to have the archive that people can view there. We're going to have a lot of current stuff, and there'll be also some stuff there that won't probably be on the website. So like
there's
going to be blades available for purchase that aren't going to be on the website. You'll be able to buy all of our apparel there. You'll be able to buy pretty much everything. I'm kind of looking for like design inspiration too, of how to give it kind of that. I have an idea, and I'm pretty good at like set design stuff too, like having worked in like the prop industry and stuff. And I've been to probably more botanicas than like most people. But I don't want this commercial candle factory botanica. So I have an idea of what I want. What I really want to ask is setting up an altar. So like not too many people know that in the shop there's a private room, which is kind of like where I do my photography for the products. And I have some chairs there. That's kind of like sometimes I'll jump on to the Discord stuff on there. But that's also where like my private altar is. I have this weird thing where like, and then maybe this is like you when you first brought it all out. Like in a way, I'm kind of nervous about bringing it out.
It's weird. It's
because I have. God bless her. I have a neighbor where the shop is who, she is like a very beautiful inside and outside lady, and her sons are best friends with my son, and she's the best. And she's very Christian religious.
Yeah.
So I'm like, that's kind of my biggest hesitation with putting it up.
I mean, it's central to our brand and culture.
I'm probably going to do it anyways. I'm like there. But for me, it's like it's revealing stuff that I've been collecting now for, I mean, I had Santa Muerte stuff before,
yeah.
You know, we, oddly enough, we were both collecting the stuff. And before you went public with it, I had this stuff already. I started off with like two statues that I got from, the guys in Monterey that we worked out a bartering deal with, you know?
Yeah.
And, but I've never, it started off at my house, and then I built it up kind of in my little personal office at the shop. So like, it's kind of it's exciting, but kind of like first time I'm like,
yeah,
here it is. Like
for me, it's part of the brand. The first picture I've ever published of myself online was me in front of this Santa Muerte altar in Mexico City. And back then I was like still in the closet with my faith practice.
That's the way I kind of feel like I'm coming out of the closet. Like I'm not gay, but like.
Yeah. But it is something that has a lot of people have been very negative about that because they don't understand it. They don't understand that it's basically a neo form of Memento Mori and just like Stoicism in a lot of ways because it's having death present in life. And it's scary, you know, and it's exotic. And a lot of the exposition that people have had to Santa Muerte has all been related to criminal culture or its depiction in media, which has not been the best. But like when we talk about a storefront and some of the aspects that we would want in there,
it's got to be in there.
The history, it's integral to the history of the brand. I want to like bring some of the memorabilia that I have from some of the wild adventures that we've had, both as a brand and both and also on my end from my experiences working. And
you're going to be able to come to a sort of museum almost, but then a museum with a gift shop basically is what we're building. And I want to go back to, you know, like when I'm done. I don't know if it's ever going to be done because it feels like altars, you're never really done.
They just grow.
Keep growing. So, but when I get to the point where I'm like, okay, the storefront, we haven't really decided what we're going to call it, whether it be the Botanica, the storefront. Once we get to that point where it's like, okay, we have this set up pretty well, I think we should have an event where like you come down, we do carne asada, we do whatever, you know, maybe bring, you know, a lot of our customers are into cars. We, you know, bring your fancy car. I'll bring mine. And we just fucking hang out and
like tacos.
Yeah. I very much want to get, I miss hanging out with our audience. I stood back from that and just grinded and was like so concerned about the growth that I kind of forgot how I started. And I want to go back to that. I want to interact with everybody. I want to invite them to more. I mean, it used to be so bad. I used to just lock the door of the storefront for Tactical Outfitters because we're so busy online. It's like, I hate to say this, but I didn't want people to walk in because we're so busy filling orders that it's like, they'd walk in and kind of consume the time, but well, I don't care. Here, yeah. I don't care anymore. Like I want you guys to walk in. I want you to, have a place where, I mean, if I had the room, I used to have a couch in Tactical Outfitters. Like it looked like the casting couch. It was literally a black leather couch.
Don't say that.
If I had, and I slept on that thing too. Like when we had the George Floyd thing, I spent the night at the shop because we were like, people were throwing shit and like trying to get into our shops. But anyways, I used to have room for a couch there and I kind of wish I kind of still did, but maybe later on. And I think too, this Botanica or storefront we'll have for a few years, but the goal, do we want to talk about that? Do we want to talk about what we've talked about, like kind of I don't know if we'd call it an end goal, but do we want to talk about what?
Yeah.
Okay, so I think the end goal, or not really the end goal, like a big goal we have is to buy a property with like living quarters that we can host our own training classes at, that you guys can come to, a storefront.
Which has always been the biggest issue. Like people want the cool classes, but we never have people that are cool enough to allow us to do.
It takes a lot to hang up pig. It's not
even just the pig. The medical classes that we want to have planned that some people are not cool with.
The shooting
some of the gun classes we have set up. So yeah, we want to have our own space so we can basically do things.
So that's a like we're all about the community. We're all about charity and stuff like that. But honestly, we want to make money to provide this next level. Basically want a fucking compound. And I mean, straight up. But I want you to be able to go to a place where you can you know, like I got a bunch of arcade machines. Like I want this all around place where you guys can come down, you can train, you can shoot, you can just have a place to learn. And say you're coming from New York, say you're coming from Connecticut, wherever, have bunk houses where like you don't have to get a hotel. Like you just stay with us, you know, and we'll take care of food and stuff like that, and we'll work it into the cost of the class. That is something that we've been talking about for a while.
And for me, it's like traveling is
it wears on you. Yeah, no, it wears on you personally. It wears on your family.
I've been on the road for over a decade now, I think. Realistically,
it's hard to stay healthy too.
I'm kind of burned out. And also we've trained so many people. We've created this giant community, both on the training aspect, the brand aspect, some of the media now, like where people are showing up on our platforms multiple times, and we've developed this relationship with people like Conejo, and people that are part of the brand in different ways that want to participate with us in other types of events. When I say other types of events, I mean mental health, community building, some aspects of spiritual practices that some of us have. That
I want a fire pit.
We're trying to figure all these things out. We realize now that we have this giant community that's kind of spread out all over the place, so we just want to give them a central space where they can, you know.
And I think it's a realistic goal, to be honest. And I want to make that a priority. And I think realistically we'll probably still travel for a while, but if we can figure out a way to make it so that you guys come to us and you don't have to pay for a hotel. I mean, you're still gonna have to pay for your flights. You're still gonna have to pay for the cost of the class, but if we can make it so that, you know, the cost is, you know, mitigated with, you know, bunkhouse style, we can save money anyway to get you guys to come to us. Maybe we can do more classes and we'll stay healthier. And, you know, and for you guys too, I mean, like we travel all the time, so it's still fun, but it's like, it's work. It's no joke work.
And also the fact that we're doing it now for multiple reasons is not even just the training aspect like the past. Now we're going off and interviewing guerrilla fighters in some places, or, figuring out content of other kinds.
We want to build a Disneyland for you guys, basically, like a destination, if we can. So it's kind of
that's in the future. We're working towards that. That's a company. We're growing. We're integrating a lot of parts. We're learning new things. Man, I didn't know how to do a podcast a while back, and I still don't. I'm trying to figure that out. But we are realizing now that this company has basically taken on a life of its own. The community behind it is.
That's the key. I think if we stay true to them, I think they'll stay true to us.
If you build it,
they will come.
They will come and hang out on a fire with DOED, and I'll show them some weird shit at some point. We are about to hit the road
again.
Again.
For a couple, I mean,
yeah,
it's like Upland, and then I think we actually have a weekend off.
Hopefully.
I think we have a weekend off, yeah.
It's been a blur. It's been a blur, man.
June and July are... May has been busy. June and July, there's no break.
Yeah.
Minus 4th of July.
It's worth it. The amount of content we're getting for the Patreon community is going to be so worth it. The amount of product we're about to drop on Sneak Reaper Industries.
Yeah, there's a giant list on my phone.
So we're working on that, and... We're also working on the last months of the training calendar for you guys that we're about to update. Training-wise, we still have some dates we're going to put on there, including some pretty unique experiences that we haven't done before.
And we want to talk about that or no?
Nah, okay. We'll talk about that later.
We're getting up there.
We're getting up.
Avi's giving us the look.
Yeah. Guys, thank you so much, Patreon community, for supporting us. You guys make the... You guys make a lot of shit happen that you don't even realize. We're going to try and be a bit more better about how we can demonstrate and show you how some of your support is making a difference, not only in our lives, but in the lives of some of the people that we interact with people that are going through some pretty interesting life changes, people that have gone through some pretty interesting life experiences. We're not only going out there and conversing with them and creating content with them, but we're actually trying to help out some of these people as well. So again, thank you guys at Patreon for providing us with the support. And we'll catch you on the next one.